Hello, dental online trainers, and welcome to the Dental Online Training Sharecast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Hartlieb. Each month, I'll be talking with dental experts who are doing amazing work in the world of dentistry and talk about how they got there, where they are today, and their influences and their journey in the world of dentistry. And as a bonus, I'll occasionally throw in a few of my solo bonding sharecasts, where I share a little with you about what's going on in my practice and lessons that I have learned along the way during my career. So tune in every other week to hear our latest episode. Hey, dental online trainers, thanks for tuning back in to our Sharecast episode with Kirk Behrendt. This episode is a two-part interview, so if you missed the first part of the conversation, please go check it out on YouTube or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcast. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the rest of this conversation with Kirk Behrendt.
Do you think that your coaching was better because you were better equipped to handle the coaching?
I don't know. That's a good question. Gosh, you're asking great questions. I think it's a culmination of a lot of experiences. You keep learning. You lose, but you don't lose the lesson. I mean, I screw up even now today. And then I love studying people that are really successful. Like, I love it. I love watching Bill Robbins speak, or Bob Margis, or Jeff Rouse, or even John Coyce, or you. I learned from Jim McKee. Like, I learned so much selfishly. I'm very selfish when I say this. I started a podcast because I wanted to share information, sure. But I also love learning. I freaking love it. And I don't know where it came from other than when I started in my postgraduate education, you know, I had to read books. I had to read, you know, E-Myth, you know, Psycho-Cybernetics, Think and Grow Rich, Seven Habits. And man, I just got caught with the bug. I never read a book in my life before college. I think I read The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton, you know, and now I freaking love it. And so I don't know what happened, but when you start to recognize that you love learning, and I can't get enough of it, I can't imagine a day ever where I go, I've learned it all.
Yeah.
Hell, that sounds horrible. There's always, and Pete Dawson, I remember sitting with him at a course. I'm like, Pete, you're 80. He's like, yep, I learn something all the time.
Isn't that great?
It's so great. He's like, I learned so much from these guys. And so I'm going to put those together. When you look at his eyes, you'd be like, he believes this. And he is learning. He was taking notes. And so that kind of stuff, Dennis, just inspired the hell out of me. And I watched how he lived his life. And I'll just tell anybody, listen, if you're struggling, you got to get in a group. You got to get around people that inspire you, because there's nothing worse than just being in a place where you're not inspired. And so, you know, I reach out to people all the time when I'm like, I can't think well about this. I need better thinking. Who can I reach out to? And they'll go, don't think like that. I call Margis on a lot of insider stuff. And he's like, Bob, you love everybody, but can you tell me about this? He's like, okay, I'll give you a couple things. Like, don't be careful, because you know, it's awesome to have a great group of people around you, don't you think?
I think study clubs are the most important thing in dentistry. Yeah. And I can tell you without question, the quality of dentistry that I'm able to do is because of the people that I surrounded myself with 30 years ago. Without question. It's so funny. People ask all the time, what should I be taking? What courses should I be taking? Join a study club. Surround yourself with people who want to learn more, and then follow that path. And it's one part of the path for sure. But be surrounded by dentists who are energized by dentistry, who love dentistry, who want to get better at dentistry. It changed my world. I'll tell you another story too. It's interesting. You're talking about being with Peter Dawson. I remember I was a young dentist and I was at a lab course, and it was a lab technician named Jörg Stuck from Switzerland, who was just an incredible denturist. He made just ceramic crowns on these dentures, and he was just awesome. And who was sitting just down the bench from me was Bob Winter, who is one of the most incredible dentists in the world, and Don Cornell, one of the most incredible lab technicians in the world. And they're sitting right down from me, and they are like deep down in this. And I'm like, why are they here? Don't they know all this? But no, there's so much to learn, right? And so that really sort of like made me really realize that, look, if someone at that level is at a course and they're so involved in this course, you just got to keep on learning. There's just more and more and more. And especially as dentistry keeps on changing, without question, you just can't keep up.
Yeah. And wouldn't you agree with this, though? The learning is such an important part of your soul, but also the relationships 10x it. You know, you don't shake people's hands when you go to these courses. You put them in headlocks. Yeah. You know, it's we're in a world where we're not needing significant relationships. We're starving for them, where people know us. And when you see the people that you love, there's nothing better than squeezing them going, dude, I love you, man. Yep. And I miss you. And when you grow together, you share experiences, it 10x is the process, don't you think?
I always feel kind of like a weird dental geek, but the end of February is my favorite time of the year because it's the midwinter meeting in Chicago, but there's all the ancillary meetings like the equilibration meeting, the restorative meeting, the fixed process meeting, all these meetings. And I just get to see people who I only see once a year. And you're right. It's not handshakes, it's big hugs. And it's really just being around people who understand why you love dentistry, and just being around in that organization and just being around people. It's so heartwarming. And that's coming up in just a week. And so I was, you know, I'm all geeked out about, hey, the meeting's coming next week and I take off the week and I'm just around all these people that I just love. It's awesome.
It is super awesome. I love it.
All right. So I want to go back. So, you are working at, remind me which restaurant.
Applebee's.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And is that where you met Bob Pop? Is that at?
Yeah, that's where I met Bob Pop. I only worked with him for a short period of time. And then I was 23, 24, trying to figure out my life. And I just wanted to get out of Milwaukee. And so I was like, I'm going to go to Seattle. I'm going to go to Scottsdale. And then I'm going to go to Charlotte. So I went to Seattle. I loved it. Interviewed with a whole bunch of companies. And then one of my dearest friends here in Milwaukee said, I'm going to Scottsdale. You want to come with me? And I'm like, hell yeah. And he had an extra condo. And so I went there for, I think I was there for 2 days when he was down there, stayed with him. I was like, this place is incredible. Is it really like this all the time? And I remember being there for a week just to visit. And then I came back and I told my mom, I want to move to Scottsdale. And she's like, well, you can do that, you know, in a couple months. I go, no. I'm getting my stuff and I'm going like now. And so I didn't even have a job. I just came out here. And so that's what I decided to do. And I started interviewing with companies. My goal was to get out of dentistry. I mean, I had a good experience with Bob. I'd learned a lot, but I really didn't, you know, I didn't see myself in dentistry for a long time. And then,
what was your role with Bob? So you were just, were you like meeting with clients, bringing new dentists on board into the lab? Were you bringing like lab cases out to the dentists? What was your job with him?
I had no idea what I was doing. So I was just a sales rep. And so there's another sales rep. His name was John. And John was kind of like the senior sales rep. I was like the junior sales rep. And he was kind of teaching me what to do. And so I was calling on lab customers. And again, there were over 600, you know, clients. And then we were starting to develop a lab, you know, a lab supply. And it was so funny. I remember meeting with Bob Sullivan. If you remember Bob Sullivan, sure. The great Bob Sullivan, and even his son, Tim. And I got to hang out with those guys. And we told them we were going to start a dental supply company. And Bob Sullivan said right to our face, he's like, dude, go for it, man. There's so much room in this space. And I'm like, you're right down the street. One of the biggest dental supply
companies. Sullivan was one of the big, back in the day. 80s, Sullivan, Mirror Dental, Shine. Shine was actually a discount.
Yes.
Like any self-respecting dentist would not order from Shine. they were the Kmart.
You said that. I didn't.
No, it's true. No self-respecting dentist would order from Shine. They were and this is back in the day. It's much different.
Much different.
The way competition is and stuff today is much different than what it was 40 years ago.
Yeah. But
back in the day, you did Patterson, you did Mirror Dental, Sullivan, but yeah. Only there was a very select few that would do Shine.
And yeah, so and you had Sullivan a couple others, like, remember AccuBite? Remember, mm-hmm. there was just like a handful of others, but you're exactly right.
Yeah, so Sullivan was a big player back in the day. And I think Sullivan actually combined with Shine, if I remember right, in the 90s. It was Sullivan Shine before Shine became the, you know, the monster that it is today.
Yeah, that was a very purposeful, you know, there's no such thing as you know, mergers. There's only acquisitions.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you call it what you,
people say
you
it was
call
a merger.
What you want.
No, you can call it what you want. That was an acquisition. So, yeah. And it was a very purposeful one. They did a great job and they bought, and I can't speak to Shine because I didn't really know those people, but I did know the Sullivan team and they were just incredible people. And so, you know, it was fun to watch that all happen. And I'm giving my limited knowledge, but that's what I did. I just basically called on Dental Supply, you know, as a dental supply rep, dental lab rep. And my job was just to be, you know, helpful. That was my only goal.
Dentist back then. What were your thoughts? So you're a young guy. The only dentist you probably knew was the dentist that you went to as a kid.
Dude, you're going to unearth some stones here. Now, because over a beer and on this podcast, I would say this. I actually did not enjoy calling on 600 dentists.
I
thought most of them were actually really miserable.
Yes.
Now, what I found out later is that's every profession. So if you look at the bell curve, you're going to find the average middle, you're going to find the lower. And our, you know, my approach wasn't to find the premium. We weren't a premium lab.
Right.
You know, we were looking for the middle to lower class, and people were always trying to strike a deal with me. And I didn't know very much. So I would say of those 600, if I called on, you know, 600 of them, I'd say 400 of them were not. I'm like, I would never want to be a dentist. Like, these people look miserable and they were unhappy. It was very hard to get it. But you always found a handful that were like, they loved it. They were very engaging. But those people always had something special. I don't know if it was they liked their team, they liked their work, they cared about their work. There was always a little something special. What's been your research?
Well, I just, you know, growing up, and I was never a gym rat. I was a lab rat. I was fascinated by dental ceramics and lab technician stuff. And so I, from the very beginning, I would just go hang out with whatever lab would allow me to hang out and just, right. You know, and then you get to hang out with the lab technicians. And by and large, not all of them, but most of them found dentists to be pretty miserable creatures.
Right.
And, you know, wouldn't pay their bills. I couldn't believe how many stories I heard about dentists not paying their lab technicians.
Yeah.
Every lab technician I got to be friends with told me about dentists stiffing them. I was in shock. I mean, these are your partners. These are dentists. Restorative dentist partners are their labs.
And it was called lab jumping. It's actually a phenomenon called lab jumping, where you run a tab up, you can't pay it, then you jump to another one, do the same thing, and then you jump to another one. And as you can imagine, if you're a dentist and I'm calling on you and you owe me $20,000, I'm not being a jerk to you because I need the $20,000 and I need the future revenue. Yeah. So we're kind of going off. So that's what I would do. And actually, I felt like I would just call the home office and have them make those calls because I'm a wuss. So those were always like really difficult conversations.
I sort of set you up on that. I was super curious. We haven't talked about it, but I was very interested to hear if that was your experience, and it doesn't surprise me at all.
Oh, dude,
you're
probably going to get me crying on here now. You're asking questions nobody's ever asked me.
You know, it's sad because, again, they are our main partners in any restorative dentistry. I mean, we need our periodontists, we need our orthodontists, we need the whole team around us, but we cannot be successful without these technicians, and their margins are so slim. I mean, they're as bad as restaurants or their profit margins. And it just, and they work so hard and they're so devoted. It just absolutely broke my heart when I would work with these technicians and just hear these stories. I'm like, I can't believe it. I used to prepay my bills back in the early days when I heard these stories. I would send them the fee for the lab work with the case because I just didn't want to be that guy.
Like, right.
You're getting the money before you even start the work.
Yeah. And again, just like dentists, the lab techs that were really good back in the day, they had to adjust their business models to support the future. So we saw a lot of great lab techs go on their own and just limit themselves to so many units per month because and as a result, they would retain clients and their fees would go up, which actually was quite brilliant. So if they went and worked in their basement, and then a lot of them adopted digital. So I think the message here is that as the world changes, you have to be aware of how your business model can suit the future and yourself too. So
it is absolutely true with what's going on in the world with digital dentistry. I mean, it's just crazy how much has changed. In fact, we're just looking at the lab day is coming up. It's Thursday, Friday, and I think part of Saturday of the midwinter week. And I was just talking to my partner, Chris, It's like, if can you imagine if you look at this lineup 10 years ago, these lab technicians would have said, like, they're on crack. Who the heck's going to go to all these courses? And it's 95% digital courses. There's maybe like 5% analog courses. 10 years ago, there was maybe 3 to 5% digital courses, right? And it's just flip flopped on its belly. And if you're not in tune with that, you're going to get left behind without question.
Yeah, that's really
that. And we'll talk more about this in just a bit. I do want to sort of. So I guess I asked you that question because you said you weren't really looking to go on into dentistry. And I was wondering if that was part of it, was that you were just calling on these very miserable people. And so do you, and I know that where you are with ACT Dental is different than where you were when you were with Pop Dental Lab. Do you think that the average dentist 30 years ago is more or less happy than the average dentist today? Do you think it's any different? Do you think it's worse or better? What do you think?
I don't know. Gosh, you're asking great questions. I think it's a little bit of the same. It's just who you hang around with. Now, one piece of the puzzle that I didn't mention is once I left Pop and I went to live in Scottsdale, I found a company called, the Business School for Dentists. And it was run by a guy by the name of Mike Schuster. And he was excellent just at, being able to teach the business part of dentistry. Now, I was only there for a very, very short period of time. I was almost there for 3 years. And I was one of their practice development analysts. So there were six of us. We had different parts of the country. I was the single guy. So I got the Northeast. And Mike was great because he made me go to education. I had to go to a place called, I actually went to see Peter Dawson speak. And I'm like, I don't really want to go watch this dentist.
How old were you?
I was 24.
Oh my God.
I couldn't even rent a car.
You were younger than the youngest dentist that was in the room.
Well, maybe.
Right? Because a dentist coming out of dental school is going to be around 26, 27.
That's true. There was an analyst that was younger than me. His name was Chad, and still one of my best friends to this day. And it was great being with those guys because they were great mentors. We had a lot of fun. A lot of them still great friends to this day, made me read books, take courses. And Mike was great to me because for 6 months, I didn't have to do anything except learn. So I took course after course after course. So I got thrown into it. And so to answer your question, like happy, not happy, for me, it was a transformation that I went from 600 dentists, most of them being miserable, to now working with people that cared. People that really wanted to do more private care, people that were going to these places called the Pankey. I remember going to the Pankey Institute. I'm thinking, it's kind of a weird name for a place. And I loved it. Clayton Davis was my instructor, and Erwin Becker. And I remember being in the condos. And I remember thinking, I have never been a part of a conversation like this. This is so cool. And I was just soaking it in. I got to meet Dr. Mark Murphy. I got to meet some incredible people back then, Dr. Mike Fling. I'm just unbelievable people in that process. Some people might remember Jack Shirley. They might remember Tom Dawson. Greg Tarantola became a great friend of mine. And through that, I got to meet, one of my favorite clients of all time. His name is Dr. Frank Graziano, who was an instructor there. But here's where this all took place for me. As I was doing this job, these people like Frank Graziano, who was in Tuckahoe, New York, and just recently sold his practice, he'd say, come to my office, stay at my home. You know what I mean? I want to teach you what I do. And I'm like, why would you invest in me? He's like, come on, come out to dinner. And he's one of many, Charlie Varapapa, are like, let me teach you how this works. And I'm like, no one has ever committed this kind of time to me as far as an education goes. So it was a special, special time for me. So my vantage point is a little bit biased because the percentages changed. Now I was around people that when you go to the Pankey Institute, I remember going to, Frank Spears' Practice of Excellence course. Remember those? Frank would let me come for free because I was just like a struggling consultant, Sure. Mm-hmm. And I remember I went like 8 times. He would let me come for free, but you're in a room with 400 other people who want to be there. They want to learn. It was a 3-day course. And man, I remember some of his stories to this day. And when you're in a room like that, it changes the way you think, it changes your energy, and it gives you a better outlook. So that's a lot of what happened to me, and I'm grateful for that. I hope my kids have that kind of experience. I hope that if you're a dentist listening, you have that kind of an experience. And if you've been to Dawson, you've been dentist in your club, you've been like anything, you you already know the value of going to Chicago and being around these people. It just makes for a better life.
How did you hook up in when you were in Arizona? How did you hook up with that group?
Yeah, so I interviewed with like 8 companies, and I created the most amazing resume. And I spent a lot of time on it. And man, it had words on there that I'm like, I should probably look that up. And so I remember interviewing with his wife, and her name was Joanne. And I got her to laugh. And I did this Jack Nicholson impersonation. And she's like, that's a really funny, what's his name again? I'm like, Jack Nicholson. And so I just got her to laugh a little bit. So she invited me back, and they interviewed me like, I think it was like 8 times. And I remember Mike saying to me, you can't even rent a car yet. I'm like, I promise you, I'll kill it for you if you give me this opportunity, only because I had experienced what I got a chance to watch what they did. And I'm like, this is a special place. And again, I think the big magnet for me was the 6 guys that were all practice development analysts. They were just really, really special human beings. And this education thing was no joke.
What did they do that you said, this is different? Do you remember?
I think a lot of it was the organization. It was a highly, highly organized place. It stood for something special. And the inertia of the time that I was there was incredible. We had as many as 30-some practices flying to Arizona in 2 different training rooms at that time. And I remember I fell on it at the right time. It was like, oh, my gosh. And I got a chance to meet people at the breaks, and they're like, this has changed my life. This has changed my life. This has changed. And I kept hearing that over. It was transformation. That's the best way to say it. You know, people came with big practices, different situations, and it was transformational. As I started to do the work myself and I started to go out and do it, I was like, oh man, I'm really worried about this doctor. And sure enough, we would train the doctor. We'd work with the doctor. And in 6 months they go, dude, my life is better. I'm like, wow. None of this stuff was like amazing groundbreaking work. Sure. It was the fact that coaching, when people got into it, they paid a big fee. There was no turning back. Right. You had to do the work. The difference between advice and coaching is you have to pay for coaching. You know what I mean? Like advice, you're like, whatever. Right. But coaching, you got to pay for that. And now you got to do it. Right. And it was fun to watch. I mean, it was systems. It was vision. It was organization. It was thinking better. It was better communication. All the things that are still the challenges today. And as doctors became better leaders, better communicators, they got better organized, they handled money better, they would all say the same thing. I love going to work now. And I'm like, well, 6 months ago, you told me you hated it.
Wow.
Oh, I love it now because I'm actually making money. It makes sense. And so I was only there for a short period of time. I left. And then I just, you know, I went on, I met my wife, and I charted a whole nother course.
I want to ask you a question before you jump
please.
In, because this is super cool. The dentist then, not about happiness and stuff like that, but is the dentist different? Essentially, is the dentist different today than the dentist when you were going through that and as you were affecting people's lives and stuff like that? And you think about that type of dentist and you think about the dentist today, same type of person or different type of people?
I think a lot of dentists go into doing this because they have a love for the science and they ultimately have a love for the people. So I think people are still the same for the most part. I think generationally they have changed and there's a lot more choices. Let me explain. You can't open up a web browser and not see multiple choices on thinking and education and even bonding and arguments on airway. I mean, heck, people can argue all day on zirconia now.
Yep.
It's just like, it's everywhere. So the choices are more, it's more, you know, think about the training centers now. Back in the day, there was like
Pinky.
3, you know, 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And when a 5th one popped up, they're like, how dare a 5th one pop up? Because there's only 4, you know? So there's more choices now. There's more options. And people always say, well, there's more debt. That is true. But that was the argument back then. And I'll go right there. My grandmother thought Elvis was the devil. So my mom always reminds me, you know, be careful with what your judgment is about the current state, because you know, every generation thinks the next generation coming behind them is, you know, it's not good.
Right.
And I think they are challenged with more debt, but I think they're all coming out. And I think if they can have the right influences in the right direction, it lends itself to a better life. But I'll tell you, even with the choices, ask any kid who's in dental school right now, how much mail they get from DSOs. I mean, it never stops. I think a lot of these kids don't even know private care is an option. You know, I'm like, do you know owning your own practice is an option? Well, I don't know, you know? Mm-hmm. And so my argument is always like the Dennis Hartleads aren't flying across the country or Barrett Straub's to go to a great meeting and say, hey, I flew all the way here for the next day to tell you how you can create a great private, you know, practice right. mm-hmm. and have a great life. And you can do it just the way I did. Because any dentist that's done it is golfing on a Friday. Do you know they're fishing?
Yeah.
You know, they're at their cabin. They're yeah. they're not flying across the country to tell others how to do it. And I don't know. You know, so I love this profession. I think it's an incredible profession, but it all starts with where are you going? And if you have a clear line of sight and people to help you, it becomes more and more meaningful every day.
Let's talk about your diversion. So you took an alternate path.
Yes, I did. And I shared this in the car. So there's
yeah, we had a great conversation. We were driving. Kirk did a presentation for one of the study clubs I belong to. I've been a member of over 30 years down in Chicago area, Medina Country Club.
Yeah.
And so Kirk and I and Angela, we carpooled and I got to hear some great stories. So Kirk, tell us about how you diverted.
My little diversion. It was actually a big diversion. Thanks for asking, because I often leave this part out only because it's significant to me, but not to a lot of other people. And so when I met my wife, you know, and I was working with Mike Schuster, she always asked me, like, what do you want to do? I'm like, I always dreamed of being an actor. And I met her at 27 and 28. I'm like, you know what? The window's closing. So I'm dating Sarah, who I'm married to now. And she's my best friend. And she's like, you should try it. I'm like, what? She's like, you should try it. I'm like, I'm getting old. She's like, now's the time. And so I actually decided to just try. And so I left and I went to LA and she eventually followed me. We lived in a studio apartment and she got a job so we could eat. And I left the whole practice development environment to try to be an actor. And there's a comedy club out there called The Groundlings. And so I was always going to try, like that was going to be my thing. Because people always do ask me, like, do you ever want to be an actor or a comedian? I go, yes, I actually did want to be a stand-up comedian. And I got into The Groundlings. I got on the first level. So back
the Groundlings, the Groundlings like the second city. The second city of, yes. of Chicago. The Groundlings like the second city in L.A.
Yes. So
where
you
all
have,
these great actors have come from. Yeah, the great comedians have come from.
Yeah, if you ever go out to L.A., go to the Groundlings and watch a show. And in the main hallway, you're going to see all the people that have graduated from there. So you're going to see Will Ferrell, Sherry O'Terry, John Lovitz. The list goes on and on of some of the greatest names in all of comedy. And so it really is. It's like the one place. And Lorne Michaels was out there quite a bit. And so I got into the first level, and the first thing I realized when you get in there is, holy moly, these people are crazy talented. Now, I think I'm pretty, you know, I can get people to laugh, you know, but those people, I couldn't breathe when I was in class with, and all these kids were younger than me. And I'm like, oh my God, this kid to my left, he's so funny. Like, I can't even look at him. Because I'm like not paying attention to what I'm doing. And it's a grueling process. So what you do is you work hard and then you get called up. It's very much like minor league baseball until you get to the top level. Now, at the time, I'm going to totally boot their names, but there were some big names there. Larry David's wife.
Cheryl.
What is her name? I can't think of it.
I know. Larry David's wife to JFK Jr.
Yes.
Or RFK Jr.
So yeah, she was there the whole time I was there. Stifler's mom from American Pie. Yeah. She's on the Discover cart. She was there every day. There's a handful of them. Like I was like, I saw these people like every time I was there all the time. And they're just hanging out. And they were really great people. And then if you get a shot, you go on to, you know, Saturday Night Live was the ultimate like calling to get there. But in the process, you'd always get called to sitcoms and things like that. So my wife was very supportive in that process. It was an entire year and I wasn't going anywhere. There were, out of the class I was in, there was probably one or two kids that went up. And so, you know, and then you get side jobs. And my wife, if she listens to this podcast, like she's like, I came home from one shooting and I had green makeup. I was a villain and I was an assassin. She's like, did you have any lines? I'm like, yeah, I think I had one word. And you'd be on these shoots all night long. And I just got to a point where I'm like, I am dating this incredible woman. I'm totally an idiot if I screw this up. I'm trying to be an actor at 28. You know, so there was that year, year and a half of my life where she just had a job. And, you know, once we started, I started to look around and I didn't find anybody that I could say, hey, this one's been on the path I want to go on. This one's the path that I want to go on. And you got to make a decision. You know, it's one of those things where you got to go for it or you got to go on to something else. And I felt like at the right time, I wasn't the most talented person. And I've recognized that over and over again. And you also, I think a certain type of actor that succeeds has nothing to lose. They're just right. Like, it's all in. I got nothing to go back to. Well, I had something to go back to. And so Sarah and I decided to get serious and I started to get back in the game. And Bernie Villadiego, God love you if you're listening. He's a spear mentor. I don't know how we got connected, but he called me. He's like, I heard you're back into coaching. And I'm like, yeah, I think so. He's like, can you help me? And I remember going up to his office and I didn't have any clients. I had nothing. I'm like, oh, shoot. And he wrote me a check and I didn't deposit it for 2 days. My wife, who is my girlfriend, eventually fiance, she's like, Sarah, and now my wife, she's like, you should deposit that. I'm like, I got to look at it for one more day. I can't believe somebody would actually believe in me. And I remember depositing that check and I'm like, holy crap, somebody could actually believe in me. And I think that was the right old age of 28. And I was getting ready to turn 29. So that's how ACT started. I actually got some help from a guy by the name of Randy Vance at the time, who was a former employee at Schuster's Place. And he's so great. And Mark Battiato and just a lot of different people. Laura Kokoski, Ted Thomas. Love you guys all. I mean, it was so great. Once I decided to chart the course, I had no money, no nothing. Right. And I never had a dream to do it big. My goal was only to do, you know, work with 10 clients. And then as I got married and we had a baby, I'm like, I can't be gone all the time. And so I decided to get a coach and so, you know, somebody to help. And her name was Sherry Kay. And shout out to Sherry. She was awesome. So many people come into your lives that help you. And she was a better coach than I was. And so I got to do the sales. She did the coaching and we created a great team for many years. And that's how ACT was in its first chapter.
I want to come back to that. One of the things that I think, the reason I wanted you to talk about how you segued out of dentistry for a while is if you had never tried to go into acting, if you had never made that step, you probably would have always wondered, I wonder if.
Right.
Right? And so for people who are in dentistry, you can step out of dentistry if you want, right? If you're thinking this isn't the right thing for me and there's something that's calling you, there's no reason not to take on that challenge and say, I need to try this. I got to see if this is going to give me more fulfillment. Because I think what can happen is if that is your true calling, then you're going to blossom in that you may not have blossomed in something that you didn't care so much for. But what can also happen, it can give you a whole new perspective and give you a perspective of like, that was actually pretty good what I had going. Actually enjoyed that more than what I thought I did. But I think it's better, personally, to try it than to sit there and 30 years later, 40 years later, wondering, what if? I wonder if I could have ever. So I think it's great. And, you know, I've told my daughter, Becca, you know, make the mistakes. And maybe they're not mistakes, but take the risk. Take the risk because don't grow old wondering if. Take the risk and see what it means.
Totally agree with you. And you and I talked about this too. I told my kids, like, you have to have a bad relationship. I want you all to get your hearts broken. I want you to be in a train wreck of a relationship, not for long, but like to say, okay, I've done that. I've been there. I know what I don't want. You got to try. And I think the other thing for me was I never ran away. I was always going to run to, you know, there were things where I'm like, okay, this isn't good. I got to run to something. So I don't know if that's helpful, but like, I was like, I'm not just going to quit. I'm not a quitter by nature. And so like, if I'm going to do anything, I'm going to go to something. And so at the end of the day, people always ask me, do you ever try to tuck your kids into going to dentistry? I'm like, no, I mean, I would if they loved it, but they got to pick something. I want you to enjoy going to work, whatever it is, you know? So don't you think
you do?
Yeah.
Hey, look, still work. I love what I do. It's work. And people say that, oh gosh, you know, it's not work. I find work, and I find it hard every single day. It's still work, but it doesn't mean that I don't love it.
Totally.
When you look back at the advice you gave Bernie some, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, and you look at sort of the person that you are now with more wisdom, right? We're older. What do you look back and you say, oh my God, I can't believe that that I got away with that? Or what was it that you look back at that you got right? And what did you get wrong on the early days when you were first in your consulting?
Well, I got a lot wrong, but as you can imagine, I borrowed a lot of stuff from things that I just knew were successful. So, and I, even now, I don't, none of my thoughts are original. They're just borrowing from the best, you know? So God love you, Bernie, if you're listening to this. Bernie's me. So we've both been clinically diagnosed as wusses, you know, like we're just not. And, you know, back in the day, I think the one thing that Bernie did that was, so he just started being clear instead of trying to please everybody. Just be clear, be clear, be clear. Don't try to be nice. Yeah. Clear is kind. And so even now today, that's my number one problem is I try often to be too nice. And I've found that the more I'm clear and the less I'm concerned about hurting someone's feelings, the better it is for everyone. You actually enjoy it and you can actually have more fun with people. And so those are one of the things, I mean, those are some of the things that come to mind. And I look at the success that he had, he just decided, you know, sometimes you just got to go and you got to be clear about your direction. And it's amazing how many people step up to help you. You know, things I got wrong, I think trying to keep people that suck the life out of you. And so many times I thought I could rehabilitate somebody or talk to them or help them understand when they were just energy suckers. And I would spend hours and hours and hours trying to perform an exorcism on team members that were already, you know, demons. And so, and I say that lightheartedly, but you know, some of them found better opportunities. I found that you just can't do that. People change, but very little.
Yeah.
And I find that it's better to communicate. And really, let me do a precursor to that. It gets bad when the dentist doesn't lead. So when a dentist isn't a leader, you've got bombs everywhere. Yeah. And you just do. Yeah. And the more the dentist leads, the more it becomes important to lean into the people that want to be there, that care about the process, that care about the future of the practice. And again, it goes back to core values. You can get anything done when you have a group of people committed to a cause. You know, and so I think the thing that I've seen, it's a Jim Collins quote I love, is like level four leaders get people to follow them. Level five leaders get people to follow a cause. And that's the transformation I love more now than ever. I find even our best leaders that are young, they're like, don't follow me. The reason we do this is the why. And you can see people are, it's so contagious in a good way, you know?
I think it's awesome. That's and I think you're right on. And I think one of the biggest challenges we've had in our practice as we've tried to regenerate our team is hanging on to those core values. Not so much hanging on to them, but just helping the new team members understand them and keeping clear leadership. I think that's so important. And but it's very challenging. It's hard to do. And I think you talk about this. And you understand this way better than people who aren't actually doing the dentistry on how physically demanding the dentistry is and how emotionally demanding the dentistry is. And the difficulty in dentistry of trying to manage and lead a team when you're trying to manage your patient and you're trying to do all the other things that's going on with dentistry. And then you have to do all that stuff and how difficult that is.
Yeah, 100%. You know, when you have the right people, life just changes. And you got to remember 30% of our breaths that are taken on this planet while you're alive at this place called work. And there's a new study out. It's called the American Times Study. You shouldn't look at it. It'll just depress you. But you know who the number one group of people is that you spend time with between 20 and 60? Mm. coworkers. So, you know, in a day and age, and it's just true, and you can look at the graph and superimpose it with the amount of time that you spend with your family, and it'll just depress you by looking at that. But I think the message here is, if you're going to go to work, and you're going to work with a group of people, you better invest in making sure they are the right type of people. And that comes with great intention. So I was the person that probably didn't listen to this. I had a coach who's like, where are your core values? And I was like, oh, I love that. Let's talk about core values. And he goes, where are they? And I go, they're not anywhere. They're in here. He's like, shut up. He's like, they're your flag in the ground. They're non-negotiable behaviors. They're verbs of how people behave. Now, that's another thing people get wrong. People say core values are like aspirational, wonderful words that we all strive. No, let me make it simple. They're verbs. They're behaviors every day.
Yeah.
This is how we behave. And when you get those right, it's amazing how people do things to help each other in an environment where there's rules. And so when somebody doesn't follow the rules and how to behave, they're called out on it, not just by you, by everybody else, and things get better lightning fast. Dentistry is a sport. It is an intense sport, and it's a bigger sport for the people listening to this podcast. Because if you're listening to this podcast up to this point, the words shade, shape, translucency, margin, those mean completely different things than a dentist who's getting their credits at a course. That is a body of work that's spiritual, emotional, and it requires a group of people who are locked in on why we do this. Because work is hard.
Yep.
And it's one of those things where you just got to look around and go, listen, I know these people have my back and I have their back. And I hate to make it as simple as that, but you would be blown away by how much better your life is every day when you can honestly say that. So,
you know, Jerry Gottlieb helped us. I know you know Jerry. She worked
love with Jerry
for so many years. And she helped our team develop our core values. And what I love about core values is that if someone is strained from the disciplines of the practice, it's not about the person. It's really about, are they representing the core values that we have for the practice? So right. It's not that this person's a bad person, that this person did a bad thing. It's just that the person's not upholding the core values of these practices. And so that is, like you said, that is the flag in the ground, and this is what we hold true. And for our team, this is what we bring up at our team meetings. We meet typically every week, and we review our core values. We identify things that we've done throughout the week that exemplify these core values. To thank those in our team who have shown those in spades, and it just helps us understand this is what we're about. This is why we're here to serve. And this is what we all need to be about. And if people stray, you know, could be a dentist, it could be, you know, anyone on the team, we have to be held accountable to those core values. It's not about us, it's about the values.
Yeah. And you got to go all the way with it. So I keep mine. So we even created medals for each one of them. Like, these are die cast medals, and they're as heavy as gold medals, you know. If there's a bigger size, I'm going to get a bigger size. But like, we call it out and recognize it not only for clients, but, you know, for team members' behaviors, because you got to make sure that they're alive and well. So sometimes people just put them on the wall and go, yeah, that's who we are. No, I agree with you, man. You got to make them as important as the behavior themselves. And so it's life changing. And I found that the more that you lean into your core values, the less crazy stuff you deal with. Let me say that again. The more you lean into your core values, like you really lean into them and you live, eat, and breathe them, the less crazy stuff. You don't deal with the crazy stuff.
Right.
You don't have the text chats going along the side between two employees that one doesn't like the other. You don't get the email from your manager in the morning going, I got a problem with so-and-so. You just don't get them. Now, I'm not going to say you're free from challenges, but you don't get the weird stuff they used to get that kept you up all night thinking to yourself, I don't enjoy this anymore.
I agree 100%. It really is. They're critical for those who are starting out their practices or have their practices and you don't have well-defined core values. You really need to work on that because it really sets the tone for the practice. How would you, if you were someone out there and they just wanted to read something and start figuring out, all right, I got to start leaning into core values, where would you go?
Yeah, I think the best, my favorite book, hands down, it's my favorite business book of all time. It's Traction by Gino Wick. So if you don't like how dry that is, because it's very left brain, it's very much step by step. But he more than anybody, lays it out. This is what they are. This is how you evaluate people. I love Lencioni's stuff. It's great, but it's a little more subjective than it is objective. And for me, at the stage in my career, I needed a step-by-step. This is the step-by-step. So Traction, I've read more than 25 times, and it's not because the book changes. I change as I get a chance, and then I go back to it. And it works. And so it tells you exactly what to do. I mean, I would highly recommend it. I also listen to it regularly on Audible just to keep me on the rails. Because you can be exposed to great information and then you forget it or you don't apply it. The question becomes, how much do you use the best information in the world? And I know multi-million dollar companies that live, eat, and breathe the EOS system. And I am here to tell you it works. And we adopted the EOS system for great dental practices. We follow the same thinking. Now it's more dental specific, but it's, you would, I tell all my clients, like, read Traction, because you'll get an understanding of how it works. So if you're listening to this, I would highly encourage you to read the book. You're gonna send me an email, go, this is so dry. It is. It is step by step by step how to do it. And if you do it, it'll make your life better.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. We want to touch on the new team member before we finish up. So give me your thoughts.
The new team member?
Yeah, in today's world, in today's hiring world, in today's, you know, it's interesting. My daughter's 27, Becca's going to be 28 this year. Yeah. And, you know, she has spent half of her working career remote.
Yeah.
And now she's, they're demanding that there's going to be a hybrid work situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's not particularly happy about that, because she's been able, she says she is more productive working remotely. Because she doesn't get bothered by people. They have their meetings when she's on her Zoom meetings or whatever, and then she can just concentrate, get herself done. If she finds that she's not being particularly productive, she can take a break, she can go exercise, she can do whatever. She said when she was in the workspace, she got bothered. You know, people come over and she'd be in the middle of working on something, and someone would come and start talking about something. Then she'd get sidetracked, and then there'd be someone else who would come over. And she says she's just more productive in her environment.
Yeah.
And so I believe that. I don't think she should lie about that. She may be wrong. That may be subjectively what she's feeling. But there's a lot of pressure for hybrid work environments. And so since we're hiring people that are, you know, traditionally not college educated, right, for many of the roles that we have, some are, many are not. How are we going to hire people who don't really want to be coming in and clocking out, especially with the hours that we typically work in a dental practice?
Yeah. And so you're my friend, and I can tell you that is a legitimate conversation, but it's not a limiter across the board. Let me explain. So I'll make it kind of simple. And people that are listening is probably aren't going to love this part, but the truth of it is if you're a dentist listening to this, the game has changed forever. It's forever. It's never going to go back to the way it was. And it's harder than ever. Right now, I can go on Indeed. I can copy your ad. I can paste it into ChatGPT. And I can tell ChatGPT to write me the perfect cover letter and perfect resume so I get this job without an interview. And it is magnificent what it writes back. So if you're putting out an ad and you're hoping to find somebody, those days are over. I think the real transition in our thinking or transformational is you're now a college recruiter. That's it. And you got to think like one, which means you got to be on the lookout for great talent in all of your community. And like you said, the thing about a dental assistant or an admin team member, and sometimes a hygienist, is that's not their primary career drive. A lot of kids do not wake up at the age of 14 and go, I want to be a dental assistant. Sure. They do. That's great. And there are a few of them, but overwhelmingly, that's not the consensus. And so when you do find somebody like this, you got to make sure they're built with the right thinking. So I always think, you know, stop placing ads, because when you're placing ads, you're getting to two final resumes. And what you do is you pick the least worst. That's what you're doing. You're like, these both suck. Which one sucks less? That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's terrible.
It is.
I think ultimately when you protect the walls of your office with people that think like you do and core values. So number one is I think you got to have the core values. You got to put them in the ground, because I'll tell you, with 19 team members, I'd have to really like very few, if I probably one or two that I found through a search, one or two. Everybody else that's come here is like, I got a friend. I got a friend who would totally eat this up, and they're crazy talented. And I'm like, game on. So that's one thought, is I would just go all in on core values. You'll be amazed. It's so counterintuitive that until you do it, you won't even know how much of an impact it makes. Number two, again, think like a recruiter. You're always on the lookout. Like I found, like Chuck Bull, you know, great orthodontist here in the city of Milwaukee. I worked with him 20-some years ago. Kevin Race, who now owns the practice. I remember being in a Starbucks with him, and he said, Kirk, you always got to be on the lookout for great people. And I was with him ordering a coffee, and he said to the woman who was taking our coffee, gosh, you got a great smile, and it looks like you're great with people. And she goes, thank you. He goes, you ever thought about a career in dentistry? And she's like, no. And he handed her his card, and he said, hey, if you ever think about a career in dentistry, why don't you call me? It's a great opportunity, especially for somebody like you. And he said, Kirk, I'm always on the lookout. He said, probably less than 5% ever take me up on it. But the ones that do, you're like, she's a keeper or he's a keeper. So you always got to be on the lookout for people like that. And that's the second piece. The third piece, I would say, well, go ahead.
I was going to say, Angela has one of her best team members that we met at Cheesecake Factory right after COVID. And I said, if you don't ask her to join your practice, I'm going to ask her to drive to Chicago. And she's awesome.
That is awesome. So there's tons of examples on that. You know, Tito Norris, he's got a team member. I think he found her in an art gallery. She's unbelievable, you know, and you just got to be on lookout for great people. So the next thing I would say is you got to have a bench. And so speaking to the hybrid, you know, I think every business has to have a bench. A bench includes, you know, that part of recruiting and the next piece that I'm going to talk about, which is margin, which is I have enough profitability and enough space between our limit. Margin is not the space around teeth. It's the space between your limit and your load, which means we have enough collecting this month. I got enough in the bank. We're not over scheduled. Like we're actually running not too thin, that I could have a person either with me on the bench who could go in a short stint, or I could call into the game when we're tight. So I'll give you an example. Dr. Barrett Straub, who is now our CEO, he had a woman named Patience. Shout out to Patience. Patience retired years ago. She was one of his best administrative team members of all time. She said, I'm done. And he goes, can I call on you when I need you? So he's always been good to her. And in a pinch, she would come and work. She's like, listen, I'm only going to work for a couple of days. I'm not working full time, but I'll help you out until you get somebody else. That's a great example. And so we even use Patience. I'm like, Patience is awesome. So finding those people and continuously being good to them and giving them that flexibility is great. Well, let me go back to the margin thing, because this is going to tie into what's going on in dentistry right now. That's why it's crazy important to move. I'm not going to say you have to get out of PPOs completely, but you can't play the PPO game because your margins are going to be pinched. You have no room. You're super people heavy already.
Yep.
And you just need more and more people to support this machine. And you don't have any money when you're too heavy in the PPOs. And as you get away from the PPOs, and here's the bottom line, how many of your patients pay your full fee? That's the bottom line. I don't care how much Delta, blah, 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 you have in your practice. It doesn't matter. Right. If you have 1,200 patients, how many of those 1,200 pay your full fee? That tells me how much you are moving in the area where people pay your full fee. Thus, you have more profitability. Thus, you have more to pay people, and thus you have more margin. So these all go hand in hand. You got to think like a recruiter. You got to have great core values, and you have to have margin emotionally, financially, so that when a team member comes to you and says, I got to go home, you go, go, you go. I got somebody from the bench. I got somebody who can help us. Or I can just say, let's go light. I have team members all the time say, I'm going to work from home. Mm-hmm. I know it's part of the environment.
Right.
And in dentistry, I think you got to create an environment where you can't work evenings. Here's one more complexity. If you're seeing patients after 5 o'clock, don't hate me. You don't have to like my message. That means you're not giving patients a good enough reason to come in before 5 o'clock. And I can already tell you, you don't have a great team, because the best team members out there don't want to work past 5 o'clock. and you're also serving a patient base that thinks you're cheap and you're easy to get to, of which they will leave you in 1 second. So seeing patients in the evening and on the weekends is dumb. I just think it's dumb. You can give me as many reasons as possible. They're all dumb. Please don't hate me for that.
As someone who worked weekends and evenings for 10 years of my career, I can tell you, the day I decided not to do that was the best day that I had in dentistry.
Yeah, because you're refreshed. You have better team members. People come in and they pay your full fee. And you go, why didn't I do this earlier?
And you know, and you're not missing out on, in my case, I wasn't missing out on my child's life. I wasn't missing out on the experiences she was having on the weekends because I was, you know, waiting on patients who wouldn't come in during the week. And same in the evenings, I was missing evening opportunities. And I said, this is too much and it's enough. And that was the best thing that I did.
It is. So, you know, will you have team members that'll say, hey, listen, I can't, you know, you have to be ready for almost anything. And while I can't control the future, I can control a few things. I can control where our business goes. I can control our core values. I can control our hours. I can control our fees. And when a team member has to go, you have to be smart enough as a leader to go, she is amazing. And she's dealing with a lot of stuff. One more piece that I'll put in there is we highly recommend check-ins. So our coach makes us do this, but at ACT Dental, if you're an employee or team member here, you have to have a check-in, which with somebody who is your coach. They might be your supervisor, your boss. That's true, but we like to think of it as a coach. We just want to know how you're doing. And you don't have to tell me anything about what's going on in your life. We're going to leave space for it. And your team members will proactively tell you, I'm not in a good place right now. Mental health is very serious. Mm-hmm. I am not a mental health expert. I don't want to claim to be. I'm going to put a system in place that allows me space to just talk or listen to a team member. And if they're in a tough spot, I got to be able to rally the troops. And I want to proactively mitigate it as much as possible when they've got potential challenges going on personally. Yeah. And when you have a regular system or cadence of checking in with great people, they never, I don't want to say they never leave you, but they are less likely to leave you because they're going to tell you when they're not happy months in advance before they leave because you're doing the check-in.
Yeah,
here's why you're going to do the check-in ultimately. This is my favorite thing I've ever heard. I heard a dental assistant say one time, I work for an amazing dentist, but she's an even better human being. I would kill for her. And she earned that dentist. And so what I'm talking about are processes that allow you to mitigate that and team members to go, hey, listen, my boss, either you care or you don't care. As a business owner, you want to make sure your processes scream, I care.
That's awesome. That's great. That is a great way to finish up our conversation.
Love it. I thought we had like 2 more hours, brother. No, just kidding.
We'll bring you back. We'll do 2 more hours.
Dude, you're the best.
Kirk, if people want to reach out to you, how do they do that?
Yeah, they can find us at actdental.com, or you can reach out to me at kirk@actdental.com, or you can follow our podcast, which Dennis has been on and he's going to keep being on. It's called The Best Practices Show, and I love it. I get a chance to be a CE junkie and I get to interview some of the best minds, just like Dr. Harleib. So thank you, brother, for having me on. I really appreciate you.
Yeah. Check out Best Practices Show. It is a phenomenal. As you can tell, Kirk is just incredibly comfortable in front of a microphone and having conversations, and his conversations with so many people in dentistry, just outstanding. So check out Best Practices Show. It's terrific. And ACT Dental. I know many of my colleagues who have been working with you guys over the years, helping many of them get out of working with PPOs and getting them into having a much more balanced practice and much more success and happiness in their practice. So, Kirk, I cannot thank you enough. This has just been it flew by. This is, as always, this is hanging out with you is just, it seems like just 5 minutes and we've been talking for a long time. So I cannot thank you enough for hanging out.
Hey, pleasure's all mine, brother. Thank you so much.
All right, Dental Online Trainers, thanks for hanging out with us for this episode. Look forward to seeing you at our next Sharecast. And until then, yours for better dentistry, I'm Dr. Dennis Harleib.
Well, thanks so much for listening or viewing our Sharecast today. If you enjoy this and you want to get more information from Dental Online Training, then check us out at dothandson.com. That's one word, dothandson.com. Now, as a reminder, DOT has so many great opportunities for your learning. We have our Wine and Unwind webinars, where we engage real time with our speakers and our viewers. During these live webinars, we bring in leaders throughout the dental industry to help keep you up to date on materials, issues, and techniques that affect you and your practice. We also have our monthly morning coffee and donut mentorship sessions, where we review cases and issues with our participants and what's going on with their practices. We recently launched our DOT Study Club session, where our DOT members present treatment cases, we do lit reviews, and our members provide pearls they found in their practice to help us all bring greater treatment to our patients. Hey, if you love doing hands-on workshops, you're going to love our live virtual workshops, where our dental online trainers perform the same techniques that I'm doing with kits that we have shipped to them from the comfort of their own home or their office. DOT was the first to offer virtual hands-on learning, and our members just simply love these courses. And finally, we have an endless selection of our on-demand, pre-recorded hands-on technique courses to help you improve the clinical dentistry that you provide for your patients. So check us out on Instagram, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts at Dental Online Training. And you can follow me at HartleemDDS if you'd like to follow on Instagram. And hey, be sure to share this with your friends and colleagues who you think might benefit from this Sharecast. And if you don't mind, leave us a 5-star review if you enjoyed our conversations. This podcast is edited by Luna Clark and includes original music by Chris Peterson. Again, thank you for listening. I'm Dr. Dennis Hartlieb, yours for better dentistry.